My Bridge Radio, that is Josh Wilson, Fall Apart, Gordon and Stan with you this morning. Thanks for joining us today. Merrilee Bradley is joining us on the Morning Conversation today. Now, over the past weeks, we have invited the MyBridge Radio family to share questions about parenting for us to talk about with Merrilee Bradley. And so we are going to be interacting about those questions this morning with Merrilee. Thanks for joining us today, Merrilee.
I'm so glad I get to be here and talk about this stuff. I love parenting and love parenting questions. And I was thinking about how this is fun for me, not because I know all the answers about parenting, but because I've had a chance to make a lot of mistakes over parenting 22 kids over the last 10 years.
Yeah. How many kids?
We've had 22 with our group homework and then with our kids and foster kids. Yes, that it's been fun.
So, but before we dive into the question, Merrilee, give us an update. If you're listening this morning, if you missed last month when we had Merrilee on, she has a unexpected blessing, cooking in the oven, as they say. Another child on the way, and quite surprised. And so, Merrilee, how you doing?
We are so excited and so wonderfully surprised by this. And I'm from a family of five kids, so five seemed totally normal. So when we got our foster baby and she was our fifth, I thought, that's it. We'll give away the baby supplies, and this is now we're done. And that was not God's plan. So I did not know I could be surprised by God's plan at this point. I thought I pretty well figured that out. But here we are, so we are very excited.
Awesome. Well, we're excited for you, Merrilee, and I know it's going to be another blessing in you and Brian's life. We're excited to have you with us this morning. We'll play a little bit of music here real quick, and then we'll come back and we'll dive into the questions.
My Bridge Radio, it's Phil Wickham. This is Amazing Grace. Thanks for spending some time with Stan and me on your Wednesday. Merrilee Bradley from Lincoln is joining us on the Morning Conversation today to tackle some of your parenting questions.
Okay, so Merrilee, first question up. My husband and I don't always agree on expectations for our children. There are some ways he'd like me to handle discipline that I find very hard to be consistent with during the day when he's not home, so I don't follow through with them. But I wonder what message that is sending our kids. How can I handle that?
Ooh, I like this one. This is tough, and this definitely happens at my house, too. I think the best thing to do is if you and your spouse are on different pages, you've got to have a conversation about that, and it cannot be in front of your kids. So I think the important thing to do is find a time after the kids are in bed or whatever to talk about the practical implications of what your husband has decided. And I think this can especially be a problem when one of you is at home all day having to be consistent, that sometimes, you know, Brian will say, well, I don't want this part of the basement played in. And then we have to talk about, well, what does that actually mean if the kids aren't allowed in there for me, whatever it is, that sometimes they don't understand what that would look like. So being able to express that really well and see if you can come to a better agreement on it, but not while the kids are hanging around. And I also think if the two of you can get on the same page that some things are okay to do when dad is home and some things are okay to do when mom is home, I don't think that's a bad thing. My kids know if they want to make a huge blanket fort in the living room, they should probably ask dad about that because mom does not love the huge blanket fort in the living room. But I love that they can do that kind of stuff with their dad. I think it's great. So I don't think it's wrong either to say, you know what, when I'm home, I'll take responsibility for the kids having this kind of fun or this kind of play or whatever. And when you're home, it's okay that we say, you know what, we're not going to do that right now because this is the kind of environment we're creating.
Bottom line is disagreement is, it should be a non-negotiable. Like, that's not okay.
Right.
I mean, you should be highly motivated to do whatever it takes, talk as long as you need to talk, work through as much you need to work through so that you at least come to a point of agreement.
Yes.
But that agreement might also be that you're going to do it a little differently depending on who's home.
I totally agree with that. And I think sometimes the best way in our marriage for Brian to see, okay, well, this is how that actually works out, is for me to say, you know what, I'm going to go away this Saturday. And you see how that works. And, you know, for him to have to realize the practical implications of it, sometimes we'll give him a little perspective adjustment to say, okay, you know what, maybe that was a little harsh. Maybe it's unrealistic to say that they can't do this or I don't want them doing that. And then, yeah, it's easier to get on the same page that way.
More questions and answers of your parenting questions when we continue our conversation with Merrilee Bradley in just about 20 minutes. So stay with us, please. MyBridge Radio, Citizen Way with How Sweet the Sound. It's so good to have you along with Stan and me on this Wednesday morning. Over the past month, listeners have been submitting some parenting questions for our time this morning with Marilee Bradley. So right now, Marilee is joining us to answer some of those parenting questions.
Okay, Marilee, question number two. I find myself yelling at my kids to get them to obey a whole lot more than I would like to, but I get so frustrated sometimes. I determine I won't yell. Then the next day, there I go again. What can I do?
I think that we correlate yelling with being an angry parent, that we feel like, well, I must be really angry or frustrated. That's why I'm yelling all the time. But I've noticed for me, and this could be different for everybody, but for me, when I'm yelling, it's actually because I'm being lazy. It's because I don't want to get up and mediate what's going on, or I don't want to deal with things until they've reached this crazy boiling point. And so I've been pacifying kids, or I've been ignoring behavior or whatever, and then all of a sudden I'm really mad about it and yelling. Mm-hmm. So I feel like to not yell requires being really proactive, and I'm hugely passionate about not yelling. That's a big deal to me in our house, but that means that when I start to see conflict brewing, I have to stop what I'm doing, I have to go over, and I have to say, we're not going to behave like that in this house, and I have to do it quietly and seriously and intently so the kids know that I mean it, and then I don't have to get to that yelling point that you do if you've kind of let things go and go and go. So I would say, I would encourage somebody who's struggling with yelling to say, okay, should I be dealing with discipline issues with my frustration at an earlier point instead of waiting until I'm angry to get on whatever the problem is?
Yeah, that's a great point, Marilee. And just to believe that that's possible, right? I mean, that, when you really think about it, what's the difference other than a lot of frustration in dealing with it point A versus point C?
Right. Yeah, and we dealt with a lot of kids who had come from conflict, and what was fascinating to me was that if I yelled, they did not hear me. They were really able to tune that out. But if I whispered, they were terrified. I think kids get that intensity and that seriousness and that eye contact when you can get down on their level and talk to them. They get that you're serious, and it's easier for them to change behavior than if you're just yelling and seem out of control. They can tune that out, or they can get afraid of you. So I think avoiding yelling is a big, big deal.
Mm-hmm. So we can either do the hard work up front early, or we can do the messy work on the back end where we get all frustrated and angry and feel bad about ourselves in the midst of it.
Exactly. That's when we compound their sin with our sin, too, and that is no fun.
Mm-hmm.
MyBridge Radio, that's For King and Country, proof of your love. This morning, your parenting questions are being fielded by our regular guest here on The Morning Conversation, Marilee Bradley.
Okay, Marilee, question number three. My 2.5-year-old son likes to dump out his milk on the floor and write on the walls with a marker. If I put him in time out or try spanking, that doesn't seem to work. I'm out of options as to what to do, so I need some advice on how to handle this behavior.
I've got a couple thoughts on this. Mm-hmm. I think, first of all, I can remember very vividly with my firstborn child, and I don't know if this is an oldest child or middle child or baby or what, but I remember one time saying to Josh, like, you're 3 years old. Why are you peeing your pants? And thinking, oh, wait, you're 3 years old. There's some element of this that is just maturity. They're going to make this mistake, and they're going to make it a bunch before they've really figured out that you're going to be consistent about it. And I think you're on the right track if you're being consistent every time. And then I think there's an element of figuring out their currency, what really matters to them. And so it may be taking away a favorite toy, or it may be saying, well, that's so sad, now we're not going to be able to have dessert with your lunch because you dumped your milk over. But figuring out what matters to them, because it may not be timeout. That may not be doing it. So figuring out what they care about, and then also giving them some practical consequences that if they spilled the milk, then they get down on the floor and they clean it up with you. If they wrote on the wall with marker, then they're going to get the bucket of water and they're going to stand there at the wall with you and they're going to wipe it off so that they understand the cost of their actions. And I also find for me that helps me feel a little bit less frustrated with the whole situation if I can see them right there participating with me, working to get this cleaned up, and that they understand this is a lot of work for mom when you make those kind of choices.
You know, Marilee, sometimes when I hear this type of question, and I really appreciate your response, I wonder if it's just staying with it, you know? When someone says it doesn't work, I wonder if really the statement should be, it hasn't worked yet, or it doesn't seem like it's worked yet, but it will kick in.
Yes. We have a 2.5-year-old. And the other day we had a meeting over here with our foster daughter's team, and somebody said to me, "Your little son is amazing. Look at him. He's coloring on the paper, and he didn't even color on the wall." And I said, "Yes, look over there on the wall where there's still some marker from a month ago where he didn't know that yet." And it was great to me to see, you know what, we have progressed. He did figure that out eventually. He's not still coloring on the wall. I did not have any other kids that colored on the wall, but he did. And to see, okay, it does take sticking with it, with being 100% consistent, with giving them time to understand what you're saying and mature a little bit. But yeah, that's tiring. That's frustrating.
Please stick around for some more answers to your parenting questions, and that'll be coming up in just about 20 minutes. MyBridge Radio, Sanctus Real, Lead Me. Good morning. Thanks for joining Stan and me this Wednesday morning. Marilee Bradley, a mom of four, foster mom to one, and with a baby on the way, is joining us on the conversation this morning to answer some of your parenting questions.
Okay, Marilee, question number four. When we're out in public and my three-year-old daughter disobeys, I don't know what to do. I want to just ignore her behavior rather than make a scene, or else I find myself getting really mad at her. No matter which way I handle it, I feel embarrassed for someone to see my child acting that way. What do you suggest?
I think it's really important to respect the dignity of our kids when we're out in public. And that's why it hurts me when I see somebody just really going after their kids in public at the grocery store or church or whatever, if they're just yelling at them or whatever. It just makes me sad. So I think it is important to deal with behavior issues that happen in public. Otherwise, they get worse. They get consistent that every time we go in this environment, kids going to lay on the ground and scream. But at the same time, to do that in a way that's respectful of our kids. So for me, that means finding a quiet place. So if that means we have to stop what we're doing in the grocery store and I have to go walk back to the van and sit down with that child in the van and have a conversation about their behavior, I'm going to do it. If that means I have to leave the grocery cart altogether and we come back at a later time, I'm going to do that. If we're at church, we might need to go to the bathroom to have a conversation about what's going on and talk about, you know, what consequences are going to happen when we get home if they're old enough to understand some of that kind of delayed gratification. But I think it does require being calm, being quiet, and then finding some privacy where you can have that talk with your child.
And it is important to have that talk, right? I mean,
I do not think you should ignore it.
Yeah, I find that one of the predictable places that pretty much every kid tries to reestablish some control is in public, because I think they learn pretty quickly that that puts mom and dad in a kind of uncomfortable situation that they seem like they can get a little leverage in, you know?
Right.
So it seems pretty important to address it, just to address it in a proper way.
Yes, and I think that's especially true to lay that groundwork. If you know, I mean, sometimes I would go to the library knowing we are probably going to have a problem here.
Right.
So
yep.
I would go in just preparing, okay, we're not going to stay more than 10 minutes. We're going to walk in there. There's going to be a problem, and I'm going to be able to say, nope, back to the car. So to go in sometimes knowing if we have a consistent problem at church, well, I'm going to go into church knowing we're going to go back to the car this time and talk about it, or we're going to head to the bathroom or find a quiet corner and talk about it. And just have that in your mind, instead of sometimes we can be so task-focused that we just don't want to have to change our plans to deal with this child.
We have more parenting questions for Marilee coming up in just a few moments. Right now, though, it's Paul Balazs, How Great Thou Art. MyBridge Radio, that's Crowder with I Am. Thanks for spending some time with Stan and me today. The MyBridge Radio family is helping to host the morning conversation today as listeners submitted some parenting questions for our guest, Marilee Bradley. Marilee is now fielding some of those questions.
Okay, Marilee, question number five. How do I tell the difference between childish behavior that I need to work with my preschooler on and disobedience? For example, I tell them to play quietly together, but soon they are yelling and laughing loudly and running around the playroom. Is that disobedience or just kids being kids?
Oh, this does take a lot of discernment. I don't think there's an easy pat answer for this. In fact, I have noticed if I tell the kids, you know, I want you to play quietly, and then 15 minutes later they're not playing quietly, I've come to understand that's on me. That 15 minutes was probably too long to expect them to continue to play quietly. And now instead of going in there angry, I need to go in there with a change of plans. All right, now we're going to do something else. And I think you can see that a lot of times in their eyes when there's this defiance. when you've asked them to do something and they do the opposite because they're trying to send you a message or they're trying to assert some power, and that has to be dealt with right away. But especially with preschoolers, they have a very short attention span. They have a very short window of opportunity there where they're going to be able to do what you've asked them to do, especially if you're not right there following through and helping them. But I'd also say as far as quiet behavior, I found it's really helpful if I hear my kids have been doing what I asked them to do, you know, if they're being quiet in the other room, which is amazing, you know, for all of 10 minutes, that I might go in there and reward them. And maybe that's just going in and hug and kiss and saying, you guys are doing such a great job. It's so nice when you can be quiet like that. That's great. I might even go in there with a couple chocolate chips and say, you guys are doing awesome. I'm so proud of you. But be able to say, this is the kind of behavior I wanted, and to see them be proud of themselves for being able to do it instead of waiting until the moment when they're not doing what I asked and then coming in as angry mom. That's always frustrating. But being able to see when they are doing the right thing and reward that.
Hmm. So when they're doing well and they're quiet, you give them sugar to amp them up, right? Is that what I heard there?
Let's pretend I said raisins. I got to speak their language sometimes. And yes, yeah. Sometimes that does mean chocolate chips.
MyBridge Radio, it's Thrive by Casting Crowns. Thanks for joining Stan and me on this 19th of March. This morning, your parenting questions are being fielded by our regular guest on The Morning Conversation, Merrily Bradley.
Okay, Merrily, question number six. When I was growing up, my parents had more and more rules for me as I got older. I would really like to lessen the rules as my kids get older and give them more responsibility and freedom. But I have no idea how to do that. Any ideas?
Ooh, Stan, I know you and I have had a lot of conversations about this kind of parenting philosophy, and I think you have some really good thoughts about teaching kids to let go, and you've obviously had a lot more experience with that with your own kids in these ages.
Yeah, for my wife and I, we invested a lot in our kids when they were young, just like you said, Merrily. And when they were about 13 years old, we started very intentionally and very aggressively beginning to give them their own ability to make decisions and reap the consequences of their decisions. We started with something simple like bedtime. I mean, we'd always determine bedtime, but now it was like, okay, you determine when you go to bed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Up till our children were 13 years old, we felt like the way their life went was on us, you know? Mm-hmm. If they were overweight, if they had bad teeth, if their mind was filled with things that they shouldn't have, their mind shouldn't be filled with, all those were decisions that really we made. But at 13 years old, we began to give them responsibility for their own life. Because, you know, about 13 years old, it gets pretty hard to police your kids, too, you know? That's just not a good, fun, healthy thing, you know? So we just progressed. We just began to take area after area and give it to them, and we told them when we were doing it. And actually, we probably gave them more responsibility than they were asking for. You know, we were kind of preempting their asks. I don't think I can remember our kids asking for some freedom because we'd already given it to them, you know, and it worked out extremely well for us.
Do you feel like that helped avoid some of the kind of teenage rebellion where kids
Absolutely.
Are looking for more freedom?
100%. You know, I worked with youth for a number of years, and I feel like one of the top two or three biggest mistakes that parents made is they tried to control too much too long. And so I really determined that we weren't going to do that, you know, and so we began to really aggressively give our kids their own responsibility and freedom to run their own lives. And our goal was by the time our child was a senior in high school at the latest, they would be completely in control of their own life. Instead of letting them go off to college and go crazy because they've got this new freedom that they've never had before.
I imagine that helps them make better choices when they feel like this is on me. This isn't just, you know, something I can do against my parents.
Right. Takes away part of the reaction mode that kids can get into.
Yeah, and I think about that actively as I'm raising my preschoolers. I want to raise them to be the kind of 13-year-olds that I could then start handing that responsibility back to.
Merrily, we've got one more question for you this morning. So we're about to worship with Seven Stories Up and Hallelujah. You can raise your hands. We won't see you through the phone line or anything. And then we'll come back and we'll ask you that last question.
MyBridge Radio, that is 10th Avenue North with You Are More. Thanks so much for joining Stan and me this Wednesday morning. Merrily Bradley, a mom of four, foster mom to one, and with a baby on the way, is joining us on the conversation today. She's answering some of your parenting questions.
All right, Merrily, we've had a great morning together, and we have one final question here. So we've raised our children as Christians, but as young adults, they have left the church. how as parents should we help support them? How can we reach out to them? How can we bring them back to the church?
Oh, Stan, I think this is all you. I could talk about potty training all day, but this one may be not in my wheelhouse.
First thing that comes to my mind is that last part of the question, how can we bring them back to the church? We can't. We can't. I mean, this is the point to which we have to completely hand our children over to the mercy of God. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, our influencing abilities still lie there, but they lie first in prayer, and I don't mean that as a Christian cliche.
We can
impact and influence our kids through prayer, and we know better than anyone how to pray very specifically for them, and we're very invested, so we can pray very passionately for them. Two, we can have an influence based through relationship, and that's one of the things I find really hard, because when kids become adults, they get out on their own, begin to make their decisions. If they don't make decisions consistent with what we as parents want, if we're not careful, we can get toods, also known as attitudes, and allow those choices to become wedges in our relationship. Mm-hmm. And then we've lost the major direct influencer that we have at our kids, which is through relationship. So whatever's going on, whatever our kids are navigating as young adults, man, protect your relationship. Invest in your relationship with them. Don't always come with agenda. Just come with love and relationship. So relationship's the second one. Mm-hmm. And then third one I would say is model. I remember one guy saying, he wanted to live a life in front of his kids that in order to reject Christ, it would be like scaling a 100-foot wall. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It was just like their life was that barrier of like, you'd have to be totally crazy because of what you've seen in your parents' life to at least longer term, bigger picture, reject Christ. So I think our modeling is huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my only thought to add would be, I want to be the father in the prodigal son story. I want to be the kind of parent that my child would feel safe coming home to no matter what terrible decisions they'd made. And I want to be safe enough that they would still want to come home. And that when they came home, I would embrace them with open arms. I think, yeah, the stuff you've listed, those are the things we can do, because there's so much that we can't do once our kids are making their own decisions.